Okay, so I'm going to carry on, roughly speaking, from where Mike Proctor left off this morning. So I'm going to start off by talking about briefly about magnetoconvection and the sort of localized two-dimensional solutions that Mike showed at the end of his talk. Then I'm going to briefly describe a bit of analysis of when we might expect this sort of behavior to occur, and then go on to talk about some simulations of three-dimensional convection and oscillatory convection. Here are a few papers, and I'd also like to mention Steve Houghton's poster on this topic, which you can go and see in the room through there, which is also closely related. Okay, so I don't really need to say anything about this because this is just what Mike said this morning. So magnetoconvection, we have an imposed vertical magnetic field, we have a Rayleigh number measuring the strength of the heating from below, Chandrasekhar number measuring the strength of the vertical magnetic field that resists the convection, we have a Prandtl number and a magnetic Prandtl number zeta representing the magnitude of the magnetic diffusion. And here are the equations in the simple Boussinesq approximation. And we have linear theory, which tells you that we get convection provided the Rayleigh number exceeds some critical value, Rc. Okay, since I don't need to say anything about more about that, I'll just briefly mention something about numerical methods. One big advantage of using the Boussinesq approximation is that, as Nigel suggested this morning, we can think of the problem as being periodic in horizontal direction. We can use a Fourier sine series to represent the solution in the vertical and a Fourier series in the horizontal. So the entire solution can be expressed using a Fourier spectral method. So there are a number of advantages. Firstly, we have the spectral accuracy, so the error of your approximation goes down exponentially as you increase the number of modes. That means you can get away with surprisingly few modes in your numerical simulations. Typically you only need 10 grid points in the vertical direction, for example, depending on coefficient values, of course. Means that for solving a Poisson problem, like you have to do, for example, to find stream function vorticity, it's trivial because you just divide by wave number squared. It also means that the linear parts of your problem, which are usually the things that limit your time step, decouples. So the linear term just decouple in Fourier coefficients because del squared is just minus k squared, for example. And that means that it's trivial to do the linear parts, which normally you'd think of as being the parts that limit your time step because they've got these highest derivatives in them. Those parts can be easily done, trivially done, implicitly, or better still, exactly, using a method that solves the linear part using the exact exponential solution. Okay, so this is where Mike finished this morning. He's talking about these sorts of solutions that you see in two-dimensional simulations, where, provided your box side is reasonably large, the convection can separate out into one region where we've got a relatively strong field, a strong convection, and a relatively weak magnetic field, and another region where we've got a rather strong magnetic field and a very weak convection or no convection at all. And these ideas go back to the early work of Mike and Nigel in the 1980s, but recently we've been doing more simulations in regions of wider domains. So this phenomenon is sometimes known as flux separation, and it can also lead to these solutions of isolated convection cells, which have been termed convectons by Sean Blanchbauer. And the simple feedback mechanism that explains this sort of behavior is that if we have a region here where the convection is more vigorous, we will get stronger flux expulsion, and so more of the magnetic flux will be expelled to this region here. Conversely, in this region here, where the magnetic field is slightly stronger, the inhibition of the convection by the field is stronger. So we get a positive feedback that can enhance this sort of behavior, which is really only impeded by diffusion, the fact that this magnetic field would prefer to diffuse out evenly. An important point in magnetoconvection with this imposed vertical field is that the total flux of this vertical field through the layer is conserved. So this integral doesn't depend on time, so you can't get rid of the magnetic field. All you can do is shunt it around to different places to make the convection more efficient in this sort of way. So here are some examples of some two-dimensional simulations. And again, I emphasize on working on this very simple, idealized model of Boussinesq Mach-Eta convection with the idealized boundary conditions. So the top and bottom are stress-free, magnetic field is required to be vertical at the boundaries, and the temperature is fixed. Here are some typical parameter values. So zeta and sigma are both 0.5. Q, the field strength, is 100. For these values, the critical Rayleigh number is 2,653. I've chosen box size L equals 10, so the length of the domain is 10 times the depth. And here are a sequence of solutions illustrating these sorts of flux-separated or convecton solutions. So the first solution here shows a convecton. So the upper panel shows the stream function psi. The lower panel shows the magnetic field B. So this is the convecton solution. We just have a single convection cell in this region here. And it has expelled magnetic flux. And therefore, in this external region, the magnetic field has increased, but only very slightly, from what it was before this convection cell appeared. Notice that this solution is highly subcritical. The Rayleigh number here is 1,700, much less than the critical value of the Rayleigh number. And so in order to find these solutions, you have to start with R greater than RC, and then work, crank back downwards again to get to this convecton solution. So then I'm going to show a sequence increasing the Rayleigh number at fixed Q. So increasing the vigor of convection, effectively. So to increase the Rayleigh number, we see solutions involving a pair of cells here, and then three cells. And all of these solutions, I should emphasize, are steady states obtained by time-stepping the equations forward for quite a long time. There's a long transient region. These are the steady states reached at large times. So these are all subcritical, but as you increase the Rayleigh number, we see more and more convection cells forming, and the magnetic field region is getting squashed smaller. And increasing the Rayleigh number further into the supercritical regime. So here we see a solution with four convection cells, and then these two have five convection cells. And as the Rayleigh number increases, the convection gets more vigorous. So this number n is the Nusselt number, which is the total heat flux divided by the heat flux through the layer in the conductive state. So if there's no convection, n equals 1. And so, for example, in this solution, the convective heat flux is about twice the conductive heat flux through the layer. And as we can see in these solutions, as we increase the Rayleigh number, the convection becomes more vigorous, and the region of magnetic flux becomes increasingly concentrated and narrower. So these, as I said, are equilibrated solutions at large times. An interesting question is whether this flux is completely expelled from this convecting region. And it seems that it isn't, although things do evolve rather slowly, so you have to be careful. But it seems that some magnetic flux does remain in between these convection cells. Now, by a bizarre coincidence, some of these solutions look a little bit like what we've seen in some of the observations of the surface of the Sun earlier this week. So if you look at the surface of the Sun, you see convection cells in the form of granules. You see little bits of magnetic flux we've heard between the convection cells. And occasionally you see regions of stronger magnetic field, perhaps pores like this. But of course, that's entirely coincidence. Any resemblance between these simulations and the surface of the Sun is entirely coincidental. Because this is just a highly idealized model. There are dozens of reasons why this is not a good model of the Sun, and even if it was, the parameters are wrong by factors like 10 to the 9.
Excuse me. Is there a scaling law between the certain Rayleigh number in this experience?
I wouldn't really claim that there's a scaling law in this regime, because there isn't really I haven't really taken these to a large range of parameter values.
Electromagnetic field destroyed this.
Sorry?
Maybe magnetic field destroyed this behavior at neutral non-response.
Yes, but at least in this region, the magnetic field is relatively passive. So you might expect, I haven't taken this to large enough Rayleigh numbers to test, but presumably there would be a usual sort of scaling law, large Rayleigh number in this region here. So a few comments about some general features of these localized states. They seem to be most apparent for fairly small values of the magnetic diffusion. As Mike said, there's quite a lot of hysteresis involved. You can see multiple stable states, depending on exactly how you start things off. You can have an either even or an odd number of cells, corresponding to, if the number of cells is even, then you get a reflection symmetry in the problem. If the number of cells is odd, that corresponds to a rotation symmetry in the bizarre feature of the Boussinesq convection that the upflows and downflows are the same. These localized states have a much larger Nusselt number than the corresponding unlocalized solution. So for each of these parameter values, there's an unstable solution which just corresponds to a regular lot of convection cells. The sort of solution that you might naively expect, there's a regular periodic structure of convection cells which is unstable, and that solution has much lower amplitude and heat flux. As I've said, these convecton solutions occur subcritically. So for example, for these parameter values we were looking at, critical Rayleigh number is 2653, but you can find the convectons down to R equals 1700, and how subcritical it is depends on particularly on zeta. Now, if you look back to these the sequence of simulations I showed, it turns out that the convecton solution, so this one here, is actually rather fragile. It only exists in a rather narrow region of parameter space, at least for the parameters I've looked at. So this convecton-type solution is rather fragile, only exists in a small region of parameter space. So at R equals 1700, we have this convecton, but at R equals 1800, there's a three-cell state, and R equals 1600, it just decays away to no convection at all. However, these other sorts of solutions, a larger Rayleigh number involving this isolated plug of magnetic flux, these seem more robust. These seem to persist for a larger range of Rayleigh numbers. So, for example, that sort of solution exists in this sequence of simulations for R equals 4,000, 6,000, up to 10,000 or so. Another point is that you can find solutions in which there are more than one patch of magnetic field or convection, but it turns out that in most cases, over very large times, these patches usually amalgamate. So here's an example showing a time sequence that illustrates some of these points. So here's a time sequence for the calculation where R equals 3,000, which is supercritical but not very supercritical. So the first thing you see is a regular pattern of six pairs of convection cells, but very weak. So we get very weak convection. So these are contour lines. These are contour lines of screen function at intervals of two time units, and contour levels are the same in each plot. So initially we get very weak regular convection. Then this localization sets in, and we get two clumps of fairly vigorous convection, and not shown. There are concentrations of magnetic field here and here. Now, as Mike was pointing out this morning, when we have a situation like this, this convection cell here really knows very little about this convection cell here. And so any further development of the solution occurs on very long timescales. But you can see that very slowly, this region here of magnetic flux slowly gets thinner, and eventually we get down to a state where all the convection is ranged in, is organized in this region here, and all the magnetic flux is piled into this region here. But this is quite a slow process. Okay, so let's look at one way of looking at these sorts of solutions is that they are an instability, a long-wave modulational instability of a regular pattern of convection rolls. So I'll briefly skip some of the analysis of this. So according to the linear theory of convection, we set solutions proportional to e to the ikx plus lambda t, and we get solutions that grow if r is greater than rc of k. But an important point is that for any value of the Rayleigh number r, there is also a neutral large-scale mode that corresponds to rearranging the vertical field lines involving bz only. And for that mode, the growth rate is just minus zeta k squared. That's just diffusion of vertical magnetic field. Now, if we do the usual thing of plotting a critical Rayleigh number against wave number, we don't see this neutral mode. So to see the whole picture of the linear theory, it's always a good idea not just to plot the critical Rayleigh number against wave number, but to plot the growth rate, lambda, as a function of wave number k, and to plot all eigenmodes in the system. So that's what I've done here. This is the conventional plot of Rayleigh number against wave number. This is a plot of the growth rate for some value of the Rayleigh number which is above the minimum of this curve. So there's a band of wave numbers here that are unstable. That's this band here. So this mode here corresponds to the convection cells, but there is also this mode here which corresponds to this rearrangement of vertical magnetic field lines, which is always damped, but its only point is it's only very weakly damped at small wave numbers, in other words, on large horizontal scales, and therefore it can play an important role, and in particular interactions between these modes can excite this mode and vice versa. So this large-scale mode, of course, is nothing new. It's always present in any magnetic problem, and this is just the same mode that's responsible for large-scale dynamo action that Keith was talking about in his talk. So if you have flow which lacks a reflection symmetry, as Keith was explaining, we get a growth rate which goes through zero when k equals zero with non-zero slope if we've got no reflection symmetry, and that gives us a positive alpha effect. So it's essentially that mode, but with a reflection symmetry, lambda goes like minus k squared.
But its amplitude is small, it's decaying. How does it involve in nonlinear interaction?
Okay, so it's only weakly damped. So suppose we have two modes here. These two modes here are both growing exponentially.
Those are growing. Get a product.
And the product of those will involve the difference of the wave numbers, which will excite a mode here. Okay? And equivalently, an interaction between this mode and this mode will excite this mode.
It drags out decaying modes.
Yeah.
It's purely nonlinear effect.
Yes. Okay, so to see that in terms of the equations, what we do is start off what looks like an ordinary weakly nonlinear expansion for convection in the usual sorts of scales. So we set r equal to the critical Rayleigh number plus small parameter epsilon squared times the perturbation. Look on this time scale, this length scale. Set convection to be of amplitude times e to the ikx plus epsilon squared times u2 b. Corresponding perturbation to B will also involve e to the ikx. But the new term corresponding to this mode here is this term that's underlined in red. So this is a vertical magnetic field which only depends on the long length scale capital X. Okay, so you can derive equations for this A, which represents the amplitude of convection cells, and this mode B, that represents the amplitude of this large-scale, almost neutral mode corresponding to rearranging vertical magnetic field lines. And if you plug through the analysis at order up to epsilon to 4, you end up with these two key equations here describing the amplitude of these two modes. So A is the amplitude of convection, and B is the amplitude of the large-scale mode. So as we said, if we ignore all the nonlinear terms, then this large-scale mode just decays by diffusion, but it's driven by this nonlinear interaction of convection. And these equations really just reiterate what I said about the beginning about the fundamental mechanism driving this instability. So this term here just says that when the magnetic field is a bit stronger, if B is positive, then convection is suppressed. This term here really represents a diffusive sort of flux of magnetic field in the direction from regions of large A to small A, or equivalently, if we have a region where A is a minimum, so the convection is region where the convection is weak, this term will be positive at a minimum of A, and therefore we will get an increase in B in regions where the amplitude A is weak. So the feedback mechanism that I mentioned at the beginning is inherent in these two terms, in these equations. And you can work out the coefficients of this for convection. And then you can work out when the basic state of regular convection rolls, which corresponds to A equals 1. So A equals 1, B equals 0, just represents a periodic solution of convection rolls. And that can be unstable to this modulated solution if this parameter mu that appears here is greater than this parameter delta. So plugging all that in, you can get a picture of when convection rolls will be unstable. And that picture looks like this. So this is the Chandrasekhar number Q, the magnetic field strength, against the magnetic diffusion parameter zeta. So over here, we expect to see, at the onset of convection, stable convection rolls, a regular periodic array of stable convection rolls. In this region here, convection rolls are unstable to a modulation of their amplitude, and so we might expect to see these flux-separated, modulated convecton-type states in this region here. So when zeta is not too large, and when Q is not too small and not too large either, suggested by this diagram. In this region over here, the onset of convection is subcritical. In that case, we can't say we don't know what's going to happen. Also, of course, convection can be oscillatory if zeta is less than 1. Not shown on this picture, because that condition depends on the Prandtl number, whereas this condition doesn't depend on the Prandtl number. So there's another curve coming somewhere on here, to the left of which the onset of convection is, in fact, oscillatory. So this predicts that if we have a particular value of Q and look at convection near onset, we should see stable regular convection rolls for zeta greater than 1, and we should get these modulation localized states as zeta is increased to values below 1. So here are some solutions that illustrate that. So Rayleigh number fairly close to onset, Q equals 500 in this case. So here, when zeta is 0.9, you get a nice regular pattern of convection rolls. As we decrease zeta, going to that potentially modulation unstable region, we get these solutions that have some modulation to the amplitude of convection. So again, these colors represent essentially streamlines. And as we decrease zeta further, the modulation gets stronger and we get increasingly localized solutions. In three dimensions, however, things are not quite so nice. Generally, convection turns out to be time-dependent, except very near onset. And these nice 2D solutions that we saw turn out to be unstable to kink modes in modes in the third direction. In general, we don't find localized solutions, not nice, neat, stationary localized solutions like we found in two-dimensional case, but we do get unsteady states that show some localization. And the other factor is that localization becomes less apparent as we increase the Rayleigh number. So here's an example of a 3D simulation. And these are contour plots of the vertical velocity at the mid-layer. So looking down on the layer from above, this represents the velocity. So we can see, remember as Mike said this morning, convection, magnetoconvection at onset in a Boussinesq system tends to prefer a pattern of convection rolls at onset. So we initially we see a pattern of convection rolls. We see some modulation in the amplitude. And then as the time increases, we see solutions that the convection rolls become modulated amplitude and start to kink. And then at larger times, we get, again, regions of vigorous convection and regions of very weak convection. But unlike the two-dimensional case where we've got these nice, settled-down, stationary states, in three dimensions, even quite close to onset, you get these messy time-dependent solutions. But nevertheless, you still see some separation between regions of strong convection and other regions where convection is weaker and the field is stronger. Here's a three-dimensional simulation starting from one of our two-dimensional convectons. So the initial condition here was a two-dimensional convection roll. So here we've got a two-dimensional convection roll with a small perturbation along the third direction. And we can see that it breaks up on a relatively fast time scale. So that in this case, small perturbations grow quite rapidly, and the convecton buckles and breaks up into blobs, and eventually these decay away to nothing because this parameter value is where the convecton exists is subcritical, and eventually the solution decays away to nothing. Finally, to mention the case of oscillatory magnetoconvection. So the problem is oscillatory if zeta is less than 1 and q is greater than critical value. We can get convection in the form of traveling or standing waves. The analogous equations to I wrote down for stationary convection involve a left-going wave, a right-going wave, and this large-scale mode. And this leads to much more complicated types of instabilities. Work is in progress on this. But nevertheless, numerical simulations do show some modulated solutions and some localization, both for traveling waves and for standing waves. But the picture is that unlike the steady case, the localized waves turn out to have lower amplitude and Nusselt number compared with the regular patterns, and we don't see such clear-cut localization. Here's an example of a standing wave solution. So this is a sequence of covering just one period of the standing wave. So here we have a standing wave, positive amplitude, negative amplitude, positive amplitude again over one cycle, and we can see that the amplitude is oscillating in time, in this time sequence, but we can also see that there's a modulation in amplitude, and this region here, the amplitude is much smaller, and correspondingly the magnetic field not shown is rather larger. And there's some interesting effects here. You can see some travelling. There are some travelling waves seem to travel into the patch of large amplitude standing waves from the patch of small amplitude. And lastly, here's a modulated travelling wave, again after some long period of transience. So this is a wave travelling to the left, and we can see a modulation of amplitude by a factor of 2 or so, with stronger convection in this region here. So the wave is travelling to the left, but this envelope, so we've got larger amplitude here, is moving in the opposite direction at rather slow amplitude. Much slower speed than the wave is travelling to the left. So in summary, this phenomenon of localization in magnetoconvection seems to occur over a fairly wide range of parameter values, and it's nice and clear cut for two-dimensional steady convection, but in three dimensions or for oscillatory convection, it's not so clear cut, and the solutions are rather messier, but we still see some similar type of phenomenon.
Is it possible to save this beautiful nonlinear structure if we are very magnetic field? In particular, consider more topologically interesting configurations and not just trivial fields.
Yes, possibly there's a large range of premises values to be looked at.
It's a structure, not values.
Yeah, it would be interesting to look at more complicated field structures.
Yeah, I mean, presumably, at least for some classes of boundary conditions, you could get a secondary flow mode as well as a secondary magnetic mode, rather like Howard and Krishnamurti, for example.
That's right, yes.
And then the question becomes, what controls the branching of energy from the primary cells into the secondary mode? I mean, clearly the Prandtl number, the magnetic Prandtl number enters, but does anything else enter as well?
Yes, so if you've got stress-free boundary conditions, then there's another large-scale mode corresponding to a large-scale flow, such as involved in the skew-varicose instability, for example, which will interact with this. And so, in fact, in those three-dimensional solutions I showed, that's also playing a role. That large-scale flow is actually apparent, depending on the fluid Prandtl number.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that can, of course, I think, have interesting consequences for the dynamo. It can either eat up the energy, or perhaps the shear flow from it could be helpful. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Have any calculation been done for other boundary conditions? I mean, for rigid boundaries, for instance, where you don't have this continuation symmetry. Yeah.
Yes, by Nigel and Mike and his team looked at varying the upper boundary condition and introducing compressibility, and I expect Mike will talk more about that tomorrow. But I think, roughly speaking, similar things happen if, for example, you use a potential field boundary condition on the top boundary, for example.
Yeah, there seems to be a slight energetic paradox in the thing you said almost at the end, where the two-dimensional pattern is there and then gives way to a three-dimensional pattern, which then dies out. This is kind of contrary to the old Malthus idea that the convection would try and organize itself to be as efficient as possible. Have you got any comments on what's going on there?
So yes, in the simple two-dimensional steady solutions that I showed at the beginning, it does what you'd expect. So it chooses the solution that maximizes the heat transport. In the three-dimensional solutions and in the oscillatory solutions, it doesn't do that, which is surprising, but there's no reason why. It's just a rather anthropomorphic way of thinking about convection to say that always happens.
What's the problem? You have a sausage, you kink it, and you don't need Malthus.
Yeah. There are instabilities that destroy the nice structures.
Okay, that's the pole again. Thank you.